The Big Wake Up by Mark Coggins is what you hope every private eye novel will be, says Edgar Award-winning author Megan Abbott. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 7, Hunter's Way. I got myself balled up trying to find the freeway on the way back, and ended up going down a residential street that dead-ended in a cul-de-sac. The Escalade didn't have the tightest turning radius in the automotive kingdom, and that, coupled with the fact there was a kid's tricycle overturned in the middle of the road, made getting turned around more of an adventure than it should have been. I wasn't immediately suspicious when I passed two guys in a Porsche who had also blundered down the street, but when they followed me out, replicated my less than optimal route to the on-ramp of Highway 580, and then stuck with me as I veered off on Highway 80 in the direction of San Francisco, I figured I had cause for concern. I came over the cantilever section of the Bay Bridge, edging into the far left lane as I approached Yerba Buena Island at mid-span. Just as I reached the exit for the island, I twitched the steering wheel over and barreled down the off-ramp, catching only a flash of the pearl-gray Porsche in my rearview as it whizzed on through the connecting tunnel. I pulled off on the shoulder for a 10 count, then wound my way back underneath the elevated bridgeway, and finally back up a hill to the access road on the other side. The short merge gave me about 30 yards to get from 10 miles per hour up to 60, but the Escalade handled it just fine, and soon I was heading west again, a good 2 or 3 minutes behind the Porsche. The obvious question was who they were and why they had been following me. None of the personal enemies I knew drove Porsches, and it was hard to imagine how my assignment for Riviera would interest anyone enough to tag along. Then I thought of the cable car incident and the unwanted attention it kept bringing me. It didn't seem at all beyond the pale that someone, either a friend of Finnegan's or a random nut job, wanted to get up close and personal with the guy involved. Whatever their interest, I didn't see them again in front or behind me for the rest of the drive through San Francisco and down Tacoma. Pulling into the parking lot for Cypress Lawn, I was forced to agree with what Arrow had said about cemeteries being big business in town. Across the street were two monument companies with their wares, granite and marble headstones, arrayed across their front porches. Back on my side, the name of the cemetery was writ large in flowers on a nearby hillside, and a fleet of Lincoln town cars loitered in reserved stalls in front of the office. And what an office it was! If the Greeks or Romans had built their temples in the California mission style, they may have looked something like this. It had columns, porticos, red tiles aplenty, and a 5-story rotunda, all done in an adobe-colored stucco. It only lacked a bell tower and a fountain, but I suspected they were on order. I went up to the main entrance at the rotunda and stepped through the 10-foot door. Inside was a small reception desk, a pair of circular staircases going up to a balcony, and a lot of dramatic open space bathed in filtered midwinter light. Arrow had told me the guy to ask for was named Jake Sandell, but the receptionist didn't even let me get my name out before she said,
"Mr. Sandell's been expecting you,"
and escorted me to an office off the left wing of the rotunda. Sandell looked a lot more put together than Arrow, but that seemed to go with the place. He sat behind a polished oak desk in shirt sleeves and a tie, a number 3 buzz cut, and the general air of someone who might have commanded military personnel before cemetery plots. He had pale blue eyes and a bland face, whose main distinguishing characteristic was a chin dimple. I got confirmation about the military background when I spotted a Marine officer's dress saber on the table behind him as he stood to shake my hand.
"Mr. Reardon,"
he said.
"It's an honor to meet you."
"Thanks," I said, surprised. "It's an honor to meet you, too." He smiled and I found myself staring at the cavernous dimple. It could have held a blueberry.
"You misunderstand me. I mean it's an honor to meet the man who stopped the cable car shooter."
I grimaced. To tell you the truth, Mr. Sandell, I'm a little embarrassed about the whole thing. I hope you don't mind if I don't talk about it.
I can respect that. Let's stick to the task at hand then. Jeff told me about your Italian lady. Would you like to take a quick trip out to the grave?
I said that I would. Sandell snagged his suit coat from a hook on the back of his door and ushered me into the hallway.
We usually take clients out in one of the town cars, but I prefer to use a golf cart when I'm by myself.
The golf cart is fine.
Good. Then we'll go out the back.
He led me to a door marked private and waved an access card in front of a reader. The lock clicked open, and we stepped outside to a combination patio utility area situated under a vine-covered trellis. The cart was parked next to a forklift, which was next to a statue of a sphinx with a cracked paw that was being reattached. We piled into the cart, and Sandell turned it on.
So what do you think of the building?
It's nice, I allowed.
You're being generous. It looks like Trump built it for Vegas.
He pressed on the accelerator and we sped off. We zigged and zagged up the hill, passing several large buildings done in the same style as the office, but this time incorporating the bell towers.
The mausoleum and the columbarium,
he said. I just learned about columbariums today. He nodded.
Ours is nice. I can give you a great deal on a comfy niche.
I looked over to see if he was serious, and he grinned back. Pass, I said. We crested the hill and came into the cemetery proper. It was laid out like a large park with strategic groupings of trees, meandering roadways, and a small lake. Each section was labeled with a type of tree or flower. Sandell plunged down a roadway that took us through the middle and waved at the oak section as we passed.
Older sections are closer in. Most of the graves from San Francisco were moved to oak.
When we came to a marker for the rose section, Sandell veered right and circumnavigated the perimeter until a point at about 2 o'clock. He pulled the cart up to the edge of the grass and stopped.
We walk from here.
A stiff breeze was blowing from the north, and it made me shiver as I stepped out of the cart. It also made the silk pinwheels on a number of the gravesites spin madly. I pointed one out to Sandell. Is that what's taking the place of flowers these days? Sandell didn't seem to hear me. He giant stepped forward to get his Oxford over the top of a Snickers bar wrapper that was tumbling along the grass. He leaned down to pick it up and then shoved it into his pocket.
Can't believe anyone eats out here,
he said.
You mentioned the pinwheels. People like them because they don't have to replace them as often as flowers. But I think it makes the place look like a carnival. Let me get my bearings.
He consulted a scrap of paper he retrieved from his jacket and pointed towards a monument of an angel weeping over a stone pedestal.
Number 1501. She'll be right over there somewhere.
Sandell led the way to a modest granite marker one plot over from the angel. Maria de Magistris was written on the marker, as well as dates for birth and death. July 23, 1929 to March 26, 1963. That matched with what Riviero had given me.
Do the dates check out?
Asked Sandell. Yep, they do. And she was buried in the cemetery in 1974?
That's what the master roll says. October 1974.
Any indication she was shipped from overseas?
She may well have been, but we don't keep records for that sort of thing.
How about who paid for the plot? He looked down at the scrap of paper.
We have that, but the name doesn't match. In fact, get this. The records show the plot was purchased by one Juan Valdez.
The guy with the coffee beans and burro. I guess someone was having a little joke.
I guess.
Actually, it's surprising she was even buried under her real name. Her brother, the guy who hired me, was convinced they would use a phony.
And who is they exactly?
It's just one individual, actually. Maria's husband, Bruno de Magistris. Apparently, Maria and Bruno were on the outs from her side of the family, and he didn't want them to know where she was buried.
Jeff Arrow probably warned you about this already, but no cemetery would let you move her, especially out of the country, without a court order. And for that, you'll have to establish a clear family relationship and a documented chronology. Furthermore, if her husband is still alive, he can petition to stop it. Spouses trump siblings in these matters.
I looked past Sandell to the weeping angel. A spider was trying to repair a web between her outstretched fingers, but the wind was playing havoc with his efforts. Arrow did give me the heads up about the court order. Thanks. He also said I might be able to find the burial transit permit from 1974 on file with the county.
It's possible they'll still have it. You need to go to the Vital Statistics Office of the County Health Department in San Mateo and ask. But you're also going to need full documentation from Italy, if that's where she died and was originally buried, plus proof of her marriage, wherever that occurred.
Okay, thanks. You've been very helpful. I looked at the model and angel again, and then over to the spinning pinwheels at the other gravesites. It struck me that people had very different ideas about death and memorializing their loved ones. I looked back at Sandell. Mind if I ask you a personal question?
I bet I can guess, but go ahead.
You being in the biz and all, what are your plans? You know, after you pass. He laughed.
I thought you were going to ask why I took this job, and I don't have a good response for that. Do you know Hunter S. Thompson's answer?
No.
Had his ashes shot out of a cannon. That's the ticket.
You have been listening to The Big Wake Up, a book Publishers Weekly described as outstanding in a starred review. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.